Chapter 21.
Not to seem dismissive of what is potentially a terrible human tragedy, said Nemiel, but you remember you told me there was a chance that 70 million people had gone missing on Sarosh?
Yes.
Well, I think I know what happened to them. From the look of it, I'd say their leader ate them.
He made the comment by private encrypted channel, vox to vox, so no one else could listen in on the conversation. For his own part, Zahariel was glad he was wearing his helmet. If not, the notables and functionaries crowding the deck might have seen his sudden smile. Their exchange took place on the embarkation deck. A visiting delegation of government officials from Sarosh had come aboard the Invincible Reason via shuttle, and the Lion had insisted they be greeted with all due ceremony. Zahariel had been chosen to lead the honour guard for the Saroshi delegation, alongside Nemiel and a selection of men from the first squads of their respective companies. It was a serious business, at least as far as the commander of the Legion was concerned. Zahariel had never felt entirely at home at such high state occasions, but his devotion to duty meant he had accepted the task without argument. Still, it would have been easier to treat it with solemnity if it was not for his cousin's voice in his ear, secretly denigrating the guests and deflating their pretensions.
"I mean, look at him," said Nemiel,
unheard by anyone but Zahariel.
"He's nearly as big as an Astartes, and that's just his gut. If you ask me, these people should start calling him the Lord Wide Exalter."
It was true, the Lord High Exalter, to give him his proper title, was fat, almost stupendously so. Zahariel estimated him at a little under 2 meters in height, but the enormous girth of his belly was so pronounced that it made him look more like a ball with arms and legs than a man. His stature seemed doubly unusual because every other Saroshi that Zahariel had seen to date tended to be slim and lithe in build. Whatever his misgivings about their habit of going masked, Zahariel had to admit that they were a graceful people. Barring the extravagance of their golden masks, the Saroshi leaned towards simplicity in their garments, men and women wearing little more than sandals and a robe wrapped loosely around their bodies, held in place with metal clasps at the shoulder and a belt at the waist. From what he had learned, they cultivated the same simplicity in their daily lives, leading a quiet, peaceful existence that eschewed both war and violence. According to Imperial surveyors, the only time the Saroshi showed any excessive emotion was during regular festivals, of the kind currently being held on the planet's surface to celebrate the Dark Angels joining the Imperial fleet. During these carnivals, many of the normal rules of social behaviour on Sarosh were suspended, allowing for a temporary licentiousness, which had been a source of unexpected pleasure to those army and fleet personnel granted shore leave to attend the festivities. As an Astartes, he was above such concerns, but Zahariel understood there was widespread disappointment among some of the fleet's officers that duty had forced them to be present during the ceremony to welcome the Lord High Exalter and his delegation when they would rather have been on Sarosh for the carnival. Zahariel had ordered the men of the Honour Guard to form up in two lines facing each other, leaving a broad avenue between them for the Lord High Exalter and his entourage to pass down. The Lion had offered to send one of the Dark Angel Stormbirds to pick up the Saroshi party, but the High Exalter had insisted on using his own shuttle, an ancient conveyance with oversized engines that struggled to lift its mass from planetary gravity and had only now passed through the rippling integrity field that prevented the internal atmosphere from bleeding out into space. Zahariel did not know quite what he'd expected the most senior political leader on Sarosh to look like, but the waddling, corpulent creature that emerged from the shuttle had never featured in his thoughts. Given that he had grown up in the harsh environment of Caliban, Zahariel had never even seen anyone who could be called fat until he had left his homeworld and visited other human cultures elsewhere in the Imperium. Shockingly, unlike the rest of his people, the Lord High Exalter did not wear a mask. His face was exposed, revealing a sweating, florid-featured, middle-aged man with a bullfrog neck, who seemed unable to move at anything faster than a slow processional stride. There was a symbol drawn on his forehead in an indigo-coloured dye, a circle with two unevenly sized, upturned wings at its base. In the style of some barbarian potentate, he was flanked on either side by young women bearing baskets of purple flowers, which were strewn in his path to be crushed to scented pulp by his ample tread.
"Visitors aboard!"
called out Zahariel, switching his helmet vox to external address as the Lord High Exalter stepped between the twin ranks of the Dark Angels.
"Honour Guard, Salute!
As one, the dark angels complied in a smooth motion, crossing their arms in front of their chests, in the sign of the Aquila.
Angels of the Imperium, we salute you, said the Lord High Exalter, waving a bloated hand as he passed. Praise the Emperor and all his works. We welcome you to Saroth.
And may I welcome you to the flagship Invincible Reason, my lord, said the lion, stepping forward to greet him. Behind him stood Luther, looking about as pleased to be at this ceremony as Ahariel felt. The Primarch of the Dark Angels wore his ceremonial armour, his surplice freshly pressed and starched with a symbol of the Dark Angels picked out in crimson thread.
I am Lionel Johnson, Legion Commander of the First Legion, the Dark Angels.
Legion Commander, said the Lord High Exalter, raising a painted eyebrow. You are the Otarchia, then. These angels serve you.
They serve the Emperor, corrected the lion. But if you meant to ask if I am their leader, then the answer is yes.
I am pleased to meet you, Master of Angels. We have much to discuss. My people are very eager to become compliant, I believe you call it. Too much time has been wasted already, lost to cultural misapprehension and foolish misunderstandings. Today we can begin a new page in the relationship between us. Are the other leaders of your fleet present? I had hoped to address them all and make clear how ready we are on Saroth to take the final steps to becoming full Imperial citizens.
I'm sure they will be glad to hear it, said the lion as he turned to lead the Lord High Exalter away from the embarkation deck. If you will follow me, I have arranged a reception where you can meet the rest of the fleet commanders. You can speak there and enlighten us with your thoughts.
Enlighten? It means to bring light?
The fat man smiled.
Yes, that is a good word. There is so much you do not understand about my people. I hope to bring light to you all.
The embarkation deck of a starship was always busy, but the deck on the flagship Invincible Reason seemed almost quiet when the lion, the Lord High Exalter, his entourage and the other dignitaries had left it. Once they were gone, the work crews and servitors who constituted the deck's permanent garrison returned to the routine tasks of maintenance that had been interrupted by the arrival of the Saroshi shuttle and the welcoming committee that had greeted it. Free of the presence of interlopers standing uselessly about and cluttering their working space, the crews made up for lost time in ensuring that all currently unused aircraft were fueled, ready to go, and in good functioning order. Zahariel remained behind in the embarkation deck, while Nemiel and his warriors had followed the Primarch and the Saroshi envoys to where the fate of Sarosh would be decided. Knowing that he and the rest of the Dark Angels would soon be deploying to the service of Sarosh, regardless of the outcome of the talks between the Lion and the Lord High Exalter, Zahariel decided to remain on the embarkation deck to prepare for that deployment. The deployment to a planet was fraught with danger, and a million and one tasks needed to be overseen before the Astartes would even encounter the enemy, if such was to be the Saroshi's fate. Zahariel was soon lost in the details of his work, prepping his armour and weapons for the drop, and he did not hear the approaching footsteps until their owner addressed him.
It will be soon, said a friendly voice behind him.
Zahariel turned to see the powerfully armoured figure of Luther, still resplendent in his ceremonial armour, black and gilded gold.
The drop to the surface, I mean.
I thought so, said Zahariel. That's why I wanted to get a head start. Luther nodded, and Zahariel sensed that his commander wished to say more, but did not yet know how to broach the subject. Luther tapped him on the shoulder and said,
Let's take a look at that shuttle, eh?
The Saroshi one. Zahariel looked over to the battered old shuttle, having had little interest in it once it had disgorged its fat cargo.
It doesn't look like much, does it?
Said Luther, walking across the deck. Zahariel followed the lion second in command and said, Apparently the Mechanicum adepts scanned it on the way in. They said it was of an obsolete design, well known from before the unification wars on Terra, so they immediately lost interest.
Ah, Well, they are immune to the romance of history, Zahariel, said Luther, walking round the battered shuttle with its oversized engines and bulbous front section. I mean, it's clearly thousands of years old. It must have taken generations of mechanics to keep it in a working state of repair. Then it should be in a museum, said Zahariel, as Luther ducked beneath a stubby wing and examined the underside of the conveyance. Perhaps, agreed Luther. It's the last functioning relic of an earlier age. It might be the only vehicle on Sarosh still capable of trans-atmospheric travel. So why bother using it? Asked Zahariel. Why not accept the lion's offer of a stormbird? Who knows, said Luther, frowning as he saw something puzzling. Perhaps the Saroshi kept it running because they knew they would need it in the future. Need it for what? Luther emerged from beneath the shuttle on the far side from Zahariel, and he could see that the Legion second in command had gone utterly pale. His face was ashen, and he looked at the shuttle with a strange expression that Zahariel could not read. Is everything all right? Asked Zahariel. Said Luther, glancing towards the great arch doors that the Lion and the Saroshi delegation had earlier passed through. Oh, yes, Zahariel. Sorry, I was distracted.
Are you sure? Asked Zahariel. You don't look well, my lord.
I'm fine, Zahariel, said Luther. Now come on, return to your battle brothers. It's not good to be too far from your fellows when you might be about to go into battle. It's bad luck, you know.
But I have things to finish here, protested Zahariel.
Never mind them, insisted Luther, leading him from the embarkation deck. Go. Be with your company and stay there until I call for you. Do you understand me?
Yes, my lord, said Zahariel, though in truth he could not fathom the sudden change in Luther's behaviour. He left the Legion second in command at the door to the embarkation deck, watching as Luther stared in fascination at the Saroshi shuttle.
Is it your custom to pick smaller men for positions of authority?
The Lord High Exalter asked blithely as he stood with a crowd of dignitaries beside the wide arch of the view portal on the observation deck.
I ask this because I notice the man you call Chapter Master is not as tall as the men he commands. Also, there is the fact of these other men, the ones you call the leaders of your fleet.
The High Exalter gestured to the military officers, fleet captains, and other imperial functionaries assembled around them.
They are also smaller than your angels,
he continued with an expression that was open and guileless.
Is it your custom to let only those who are born as giants bear the brunt of the fighting, while the small men act as their officers?
It is not a question of custom,
answered the lion in a diplomatic tone, as Chapter Master Hadariel bristled in anger beside him.
Nor are all of us born as giants. The Dark Angels are members of the Astartes. We are a product of the Emperor's science. We are given physical enhancements to improve our abilities.
Ah, so you are changed,
said the High Exalter, nodding his head slowly.
You are that grown. Now I understand. But what of you, Sir Hadariel? You stand taller than most men, but you are not as tall as your warriors. Please, why is this?
I was unfortunate, replied the chapter master. By the time I was chosen, I was too old to be granted gene seed. In its place, I was given surgery to modify my body and make me a better warrior.
Nemiel stood at the other end of the observation deck with the rest of his squad, close enough to hear every word of their conversation with his enhanced hearing, wincing at the Lord High Exalter's line of conversation. The Lord High Exalter had no way of knowing how sensitive the Chapter Master was about the fact that he'd not been given gene seed. Inadvertently, the Saroshi leader had managed to broach the one subject most likely to lead to crossed words and some form of diplomatic breach. It was to Hadariel's credit that he had so far managed to keep any suggestion that he was offended by his visitor's line of questioning from his face. Anxious to defuse any potential outburst from Hadariel, the lion said,
May I take it you have some understanding of such technologies? You use the words that grown. Does your culture have experience of genetic science?
Yes, but I am here to discuss more important matters.
Waving the question away with a dismissive hand, the Lord High Exalter turned to face the broad expanse of the view portal behind him. He spread his arms wide, the gesture taking in the blue globe of Sarosh visible through the portal.
The world is beautiful, is it not? I have never seen it from this angle before. Granted, some of our historic books include picture images of our world taken from orbit, but before today, the shuttle that brought me here had not flown for nearly a century. Even if I had ordered it to take me into space, the view portals on a shuttle are no bigger than my hand. If it weren't for the Imperium, I would never have seen the magnificence of the sight I see before me. I thank you for that. To look down on the world I have known, to see its seas and continents laid out before me, it has granted me a new perspective.
It is only the beginning, my Lord Exalter, said Governor-elect First. Perhaps sensing the tension, he pushed himself forward to stand beside the lion. You can scarcely conceive of the wonders we can bring to your world once it is compliant.
Oh, yes, compliance, grimaced the fat man. An interesting choice of words. It refers to the process of conforming to a demand or proposal. Also, it means to become yielding, flexible, submissive. And if we do not submit, what then? Will you unleash your angels, Lord Governor-elect? Will you destroy us if we do not comply with your wishes?
Well, I said First, visibly squirming. That is to say...
It is not the Governor-elect's decision to make, interrupted the lion. It is mine. Your question implies a criticism of our ways, Lord Exalter. You must understand, the aim of this crusade is to reunite all the lost fragments of mankind. We come to you as brothers. We have no wish to use force to bring about your compliance, but experience tells us that it is sometimes necessary. Occasionally, whether through ignorance or because they are controlled by an unsuitable regime, the people of a rediscovered world choose to oppose us. It makes no difference. We have come to rescue you. Whether or not you wish to be rescued is hardly material to the outcome.
And what of our regime?
Asked the Lord High Exalter. The Saroshi diplomat turned back from the view portal to face the lion and the ranks of Imperial commanders behind him.
What of the Saroshi government? Have you judged us to be unsuitable?
The decision has not yet been made, said the lion. I must say I am pleased we talk so frankly. I had heard your people have a tendency to be evasive on these matters.
Yes, we were evasive, said the High Exalter,
holding the lion's gaze coolly.
Until we found the time fast approaching when we were called upon to make a choice. I understand the Imperium does not worship any gods. In fact, you forbid it. Is this true?
It is,
said the lion, caught unawares by his guest's sudden change of tack.
But I do not see its relevance. I was told that you share our view of religion on Sarosh. You have no priesthood or places of worship.
In that you are incorrect, said the Lord High Exalter. Our temples are in the wild places, in the forests and the caves, where the messengers of our gods speak to their chosen representatives, the Ascendim. We are a pious people. Our society is founded on the divine mandate given to the Ascendim. We have followed their dictates for more than 1,000 years, and we have achieved the perfect society.
Why am I hearing this now?
Snapped the lion, looking around at the governor-elect and the other imperial dignitaries for answers, only to see that they were as mystified as he was. He turned back to the Saroshi leader.
You hid this from us?
We did, agreed the Lord Exalter. We were aided in this by the fact that faith is a private matter among my people. When your first Imperial scouts came to our planet, There was nothing on our world for them to recognize as signs of religion. No grand temples or sacred precincts inside our cities. We keep our holy places hidden away, simply because the Melakim have ordered that it should be so.
The Melakim?
Echoed the lion, dumbfounded.
They are our gods. They speak to the Ascendim, the only ones who can hear their divine voices. They speak to them when they walk in the wilderness, away from civilization. They tell the Ascendim what is to be done, and their word is relayed to the rest of our society. By such methods is the will of the gods made clear.
This is foolishness, said the lion, growing angry.
You are rational people from a technologically advanced society. You must be able to see this superstition for what it is. You showed your true faces too early, said the Lord High Exalter. When your scouts revealed themselves to us, they spoke eruditely of how you had thrown down religion and damned it all as childish superstition. From that moment, we knew you were evil. No society can make claim to be righteous if it does not acknowledge the primacy of divine power. Secular truth is false truth. When we heard that your emperor preaches there are only false gods, we knew his real nature at once. He is a liar demon, a creature of falsehood, sent by dark powers to lead mankind astray.
Zahariel made his way through the corridors of the ship to where the rest of his squad was currently billeted, running through the items he still needed to attend to before returning to the Wrath of Caliban and the drop to Sarosh. He had few illusions that they would be making planetfall soon, for Kyrgyz's warnings that the Saroshi were not to be trusted still rang in his ears. Even as the thought occurred, he wondered again at the strange expression he had seen on Luther's face as he had come up from underneath the Saroshi shuttle, wondering what the Legion's second had seen that had... Had what? Unnerved him? Zahariel pictured Luther as he had come up, his face pallid and uneasy. What could he have seen that would unsettle a great warrior and hero such as Luther? The more he studied the image in his face, the more he let his mind drift, looking into the eyes of the man whose face was held in his mind's eye. He saw pain there, and sadness, and years of living in the shadow of another. Zahariel's senses that were even now becoming surer and more sensitive, thanks to the training of Brother Librarian Israfael, tried to make sense of the emotions and feelings coming off the image in his head. Don't trust them, and don't turn your back on them. Zahariel halted as a sudden wave of nausea swept over him. As an Astartes, he almost never suffered from any such feelings, his gen-enhanced metabolism compensating for almost every sensation that might trigger such a reaction. However, this was no physiological reaction. This was a sure and sudden sense of something deeply wrong. Worse still, was the sense that he was not the only one to realize that something was wrong, but that he was the only one who desired to stop it. The embarkation deck was quiet, and that in itself was unusual. Zahariel stepped over the threshold of the blast door and scanned for the normal personnel, techs, mechanicum adepts, and loaders that should be filling the space with life and bustle. The hiss and creak of the deck and the ever-present thrum that filled a starship were the only sounds, and Zahariel immediately knew that his suspicions had not been groundless. Something was definitely wrong. He crossed the embarkation deck towards the Saroshi shuttle and circled it, looking for anything out of place or otherwise unusual. As he had said while talking to Luther, the design was old and practically obsolete, the engines vastly oversized for such a small conveyance. He ducked beneath one of the wings, crawling on all fours beneath the shuttle, hoping to see what had so unnerved Luther. The underside of the shuttle stank of engine oil and hydraulic fluids, the plates of metal crudely bolted and welded together with little regard for the quality of workmanship. At first, Zahariel could see nothing unusual, and moved further along the belly of the shuttle. He ducked his head around a loose plate, and... Zahariel turned back to look at the plate. The hinges holding it were rusted and stiff. He shook his head as he realized that it was a miracle that this shuttle had even broken atmosphere, let alone expected to return. As he stared at the open panel, he suddenly realized what was wrong with the shuttle, at least partly. This was no orbital shuttle, for there was no heat shielding on the craft's belly. This was a purely atmospheric craft, primarily designed to fly within the bounds of a planet's airspace, which explained the oversized engines, presumably retrofitted to allow their one craft to reach orbit. Without heat shielding, anyone who tried to descend to a planet's surface in this craft would not survive the journey. The craft would turn into a flaming comet as the heat of re-entry seared anyone inside to ashes before melting to nothing as it plunged to its death. The people that had boarded this craft had clearly done so with no intention of ever returning to the surface. That meant that their mission was one way. Zahariel crawled from beneath the shuttle, horrified at the idea that they had been boarded by enemies who posed as friends. He looked at the shuttle, seeing it for the vile transport of the enemy it truly was. But what could they hope to achieve? He whispered to himself. Barely a handful of Soroshi had boarded the Invincible Reason. Hardly enough to trouble even one Dark Angel, let alone a ship full of them. So what purpose did this visit serve? Zahariel circled the shuttle, tapping his fist on the battered fuselage, the softly humming engines and its bulbous front section. As he reached the front of the shuttle, he wondered again at the strange design of the craft, for its nose was surely a poor choice of shape for any craft designed for atmospheric flight. Though he was no aeronautical engineer, he had learnt enough to know that aircraft depended on lift created by their shape and wings to keep them aloft, and that such a heavy-looking front section made no sense. Looking more closely at the nose, Zahariel could see that it had been a later addition to the craft's structure, the paint and workmanship different from the rest of the ship. He stood back and looked at the lines of the shuttle's front, seeing now that the entire section had been added over and above where the original nose of the shuttle ended. Zahariel took hold of one of the access hatches and pulled. As he had feared, it was welded shut, but he knew that something dreadful was concealed within. He took a deep breath and gripped the release handle, pulling it with all his might. Metal bent and buckled and finally came free, the welded joint unable to withstand the strength of one of the Emperor's finest. Zahariel tossed aside the ruined panel and stared into the gap he had torn in the front section. Inside, he saw a mass of thick blocks of dark metal fitted around a circular core about a meter across. Thick struts of the same dark metal protected the central core, and a procession of winking lights circled the device hidden within the secret compartment.
"It's a weapon of some sort," said a voice behind him. "An atomic warhead, I think."
Zahariel spun, his fist raised to strike the speaker. Luther stood before him, his face a mask of anguish and regret.
"An atomic warhead?"
asked Zahariel.
"Yes,"
said Luther, coming closer and peering into the opened access panel.
"I think the whole shuttle is nothing but one giant missile."
"You knew of this?" said Zahariel. "Why didn't you say anything?"
Luther turned away from him, his shoulders slumped as though in defeat. He turned back to Zahariel, who was shocked to see tears in his commander's eyes.
"I almost did, Zahariel," said Luther. "I wanted to. But then I thought of what would be mine if I didn't. The Legion, Command, Caliban. It would all be mine, and I would no longer have to share it with someone whose shadow obscures everything I do."
"The Lion?" said Zahariel. "His deeds are great, but so are yours."
"Maybe in another age," said Luther, "one in which I did not share the same span of time as a man like the Lion. In any other age, the glory of leading Caliban from the darkness would have been mine. But instead it goes to my brother. You have no idea how galling it is to be the greatest man of the age and have that taken from you in an instant."
Zahariel watched the words flow from Luther in a flood. For a decade and more, these feelings had been contained within a dam of honor and restraint. But the dam was crumbling, and Luther's true feelings were spilling out.
"I never realized,"
said Zahariel, his hand sliding towards his sword.
"No one did."
"No, even I did not. Not fully," said Luther. "Not until I saw this shuttle. I wouldn't have to lift a finger all I'd have to do is walk away, and everything I wanted would be mine.
Then why are you back here?
I ordered everyone out of the embarkation deck and walked away, said Luther, one hand covering his eyes as he spoke. But I hadn't gone more than a few steps before I knew I couldn't do it.
Then you're here to stop it? Asked Zahariel, relieved beyond words.
I am, nodded Luther. So you can stop reaching for your blade. I realized that it was an honor to serve a warrior as great as the Lion, and that I was the luckiest man alive to be allowed to call him brother.
Zahariel turned back to the shuttle and the deadly cargo it contained. Then how do we stop it?
Ah, said Luther. That I don't know.
You go too far,
said the Lion, his hand going to the ceremonial sword at his side.
No, you do, responded the High Exalter. You are abominations, all of you,
he snarled, his fat jowls wobbling.
The only reason I bear your presence is because I have been granted the honor of pronouncing the judgment of my people upon you. Your Imperium is the work of evil men, said the Lord High Exalter. Your words are falsehoods. You are craven and dishonorable, and your angels. Your angels are the worst, the product of rutting beasts. You are liar angels. You are loathsome and unclean. Enough! Roared the Lion.
The commander of the Dark Angels Legion was enraged, his hand gripping the pommel of his sword so tightly that his knuckles were white.
By the Emperor!
I spit on your Emperor, said the fat man,
and the gathered Imperials gave a collective intake of breath.
And I spit on you, Lionel Johnson.
The High Exalter stretched out his arms, laid three fingers from his right hand on top of the five fingers of his left, and touched them to the symbol painted on his forehead.
You are not men, nor worthy leaders. You are.
He was not allowed to finish the sentence. Before the Lord High Exalter could say another word, the Lion drew his gleaming sword and clove through the fat man's shoulder and down into his ample gut. Zaharia looked down at the device in the shuttle's front section as the blinking light suddenly began to speed up, and a single pulsing red light lit up in the center of the sphere. The engines of the shuttle coughed to life, and a rising whine of ignition built from within.
Damn, said Luther.